Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's conference. At that time, you may press star one on your touch-tone phone to ask a question. I'd like to inform all parties that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call over to Mr. David Prosper, NightSky Network. Thank you. You may begin.
Thanks, Amber. And yeah, hi, everyone. We're glad to join you here from the NightSky Network headquarters at the Astronomical Society of the Pacific in San Francisco, California. I'm very excited to present this teleconference with our guest speaker, Connie Walker from the Globe at Night program. Colleen and the Globe at Night team have joined us in the past, and we're excited to hear about their expanded program for this year, including new smartphone apps and monthly sky monitoring events. Now, before we get started, I just want to make sure that you can all view the presentation slides. If you don't have the slides up in front of you yet, you can download them at astrosociety.org/nsntelecon, and we have both PowerPoint and very recently updated PDF file, thanks to Connie. And if you have any problems along the way, please email us at nightskyinfo@astrosociety.org. Now, for a brief minute, I would like to just hear from the folks joining us tonight. I'd like to open up the lines, and if you could just give us your name and tell us where you're calling from and what club you're with, we'll have an idea of who's listening in.
This is Stuart Myers, Amateur Astronomer Inc. in New Jersey. Yeah.
Chris, Astronomers of Jackson, Michigan.
This is Mike McCabe from Taunton, Massachusetts.
I'm going to have to say something here.
This is Geraldine
Galasso. I'm in the same club as Mike, Society of Southern New England, calling from Massachusetts.
This is Steve Seidenthal, calling from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm with Charlie Elliott Astronomy.
This is Willie Yee from Mid-Hudson Valley, New York, Mid-Hudson Astronomical Association.
John Gallagher from the Land of Paradise, Hawaiian Astronomical Society.
It's Bob Young from the Astronomical Society of Harrisburg.
Bobette Derry from Booker, Texas, Star Creek Astronomical Society.
Theo Ramakas, Charlie Elliott Astronomy.
Eileen Grabowski from Norman North Astronomy Club and Oklahoma City Astronomy Club in Oklahoma.
At Burke.
Hi.
Astronomy
Hi,
Club
Connie.
In Prescott, Arizona.
Mark Jones, St. Louis Astronomical Society.
Marie Lott, Atlanta, Georgia, Charlie Elliott Astronomy.
John Bunyan from the Grants Pass Astronomers in Oregon.
Virginia Renahan, Amateur Telescope Makers of Boston.
George Normandin from the Copernic Astro Society in Vestal, New York.
Sherilyn Ramirez, Kansas Astronomical Observers out of Wichita, Kansas.
Christian Brueggemann, Oklahoma City Astronomy Club.
I've 30 clubs on it so far.
All right, we'll just wrap it up now. Thank you all for chiming in. It's great to hear from you all and actually hear your real voices. I mostly just get to interact with you via email, so this is great. Now we're going to start our official welcomings here. If this is your first teleconference with us, welcome. Just follow along with the slides, and there'll be time for a brief QA at the end of the talk. Also, stick around for a minute after the presentation and Q&A, and we'll be giving away a prize. Our winner will receive a signed copy of How It Began by Chris Impey, courtesy of the Astronomical Society of the Pacific and Norton Books. And for one brief minute, we're going to give you some of the latest Night Sky Network news for all of our members out here. We are excited to announce that your 2014 award pins have arrived, and we are shipping them this week. So keep your eyes peeled. And speaking of shipping, we're also shipping out the latest round of toolkits to qualifying clubs as well. Remember to not only schedule your events in the NightSky Network public calendar, but also to log those events to qualify. We're hoping to make it easier for you to log your events and more with some upcoming updates to the NightSky Network page, including mobile-friendly interfaces and more. The actual details of this will be headed to your club shortly. And right now, it is my great pleasure to introduce our speaker, Connie Walker from Globe at Night. Connie is a scientist. Hey there. Connie is a scientist at the National Optical Astronomy Observatory in Tucson, Arizona, where she spends her time training teachers, designing astronomy curriculum, and spearheading the Globe at Night program. We haven't heard from her in a few years, and we look forward to hearing all about the updates to this program. Connie has received many awards honoring her work in astronomy education, including having an asteroid named after her, Asteroid 29292, Connie Walker. And for her efforts in bringing dark sky awareness to the public, Connie won the International Dark Sky Association's Hoag Robinson Award in 2011. And we're happy to have her expertise as she serves on the board of directors here at the Astronomical Society of the Pacific as the board vice president. And this evening, we are honored to have her join us to share the latest news about Globe at Night. Welcome, Connie, and take it away.
Well, thank you, David. The honor is actually all mine, and I can't stress enough how important I think having these astronomy clubs and all of the members that are out there and all they do for the profession of astronomy. I want to thank them deeply, especially with their help in the International Year of Astronomy. We really could not have done all the events that were planned for IYA without them. So my thanks goes out to them very much. So I'm here tonight to talk about something that's near and dear to my heart. That's the Globe at Night program, which is now starting its ninth year, and it's growing every single year. And again, a lot of that is due to the participation of the various amateur astronomers across the world. We've had participation from 115 different countries all over the world, and we're approaching 100,000 data points. And maybe you will be one of the 100,000th data points. Who knows? So keep contributing those measurements. We'll be shortly approaching that. I bet you anything it could be as soon as at the end of this first campaign, which actually ends for this month in just a few days. So if I would imagine that most people out there that I'm talking to tonight know about Globe at Night, but if you don't, very, very briefly, it's a light pollution monitoring campaign. And although that sounds dull, it's not that dull, really. It's a lot of fun. So we're going to talk a little bit about what we do in order to participate in that campaign in just a few minutes. But it really does help scientists and amateur astronomers monitor the conditions in their city or around their city or at their observatory and monitor it over time. And they can do various things, which we'll discuss with that particular data set. So without further ado, we're on slide one. So I want to get to slide two before too much time goes by. And here you have a beautiful scene of Kitt Peak National Observatory. It was taken by Babak Tafreshi, who is the founder of The World at Night, which has a lot of landscape astrophotography on that site. So if you haven't seen that, you want to go to the twanight.org and look at those beautiful images. Well, I wanted to start out with something that I think that you would appreciate, and that is some lighting facts that I've taken from the International Dark Sky Association. It is actually on the status of world outdoor lighting. It's sort of a generalized overview of what the status is at this point. And one of the first facts there is that 8% of the total energy used for outdoor lighting, 8% of all total energy is used for outdoor lighting, I should say, and that 80% is used for commercial and public exterior lighting. So all these facts we have here from the 75 million outdoor lighting fixtures worldwide that comprise this 80%, and to the 300 million outdoor lighting fixtures that are in Europe, and 160 of those, that's 160 million, are in the U.S., to the facts about perhaps maybe 60 to 70% of all of that energy that's coming from those fixtures, those lighting fixtures, is wasted energy, basically. And there's various breakdowns there. There's about five different categories actually it's the executive director has broken this down. He's the executive director of the International Dark Sky Association. He labels it as either being unwarranted light or situations where there's overlighting or perhaps there's no curfew or the lights are not dimmed after a certain time period or maybe the lights are just have no shielding and are very problematic in terms of glare, or again, no shielding and have the light totally going upwards. So he breaks them down into these categories and attributes basically the amount of, the percentage-wise, how much of that 60 to 70% of the light is wasted. And then, he translates that into the petawatts, which is 10 to the 15 hours annually that is wasted energy. And he translates that again. I love this. It's into power plants. So that's equivalent to about 500 power plants that could light 7.75 million homes, basically. And it produces 750 million tons of CO2 gas. So a lot of greenhouse gas being tossed into the atmosphere, basically, is that that amounts to in terms of pounds. And then again, just in the United States alone, $110 billion a year. Worldwide, $110 billion a year is wasted, approximately. So that gives you sort of an overview of the problem that we have facing us worldwide. And, of course, I'm not really going to go over the solutions in this particular talk, but everybody, I think, here knows that most of the solutions center around the fact that you should shield lights and hopefully make them fully cut off so you can't see the light bulb itself. And then the other factor would be to use energy-efficient bulbs. But that's pretty much a subject for another talk. And so, you know, if you go to slide 3 at this point, this is just an overview that you may want to use in your own talks, but light pollution basically affects mostly these four areas. We already talked about how it affects energy and cost and how it affects astronomy. You know that all too well. But there are other issues which revolve around how it affects human health and wildlife. And briefly, in terms of human health, you are influencing the levels of melatonin at night. If you have too much light, especially blue light, that depletes your levels of melatonin, and that has direct effects to things like sleep disorders and now ties, they believe, to a couple different types of cancer. So it's a very, very, it's very important in terms of human health, and that's, again, another lecture. But in wildlife, it affects so many different types of wildlife, it would just blow your mind to know. From salamanders to frogs to birds to sea turtles to insects to different types of plant life. Too much light at night really disrupts their rhythms, their natural rhythms of day and night, and how that plays into the ecosystem. So that is, again, a very important influence. So you have all of these factors that a simple shield on a light could actually help wonders, or using an energy-efficient light bulb, or both, actually, is what you want. So just to give you an overview, again, those are very important effects that light pollution has on everyday life, not just astronomy. So what do we do? What can we do to bring more awareness to the public? I consider amateur astronomers as ambassadors of astronomy. And as ambassadors of astronomy, forgive me, but I really feel that part of the job would be to bring or educate, actually, the public on issues surrounding light pollution. So one way, one very fun way, if you want to say that Globe at Night's fun, is to actually introduce the public to Globe at Night and get as many people as you can involved in taking measurements. So Globe at Night is basically an international citizen science campaign to raise the public awareness of the impact of light pollution. And you do this by inviting them to measure their night sky brightness, and we'll talk about that in just a second. They can use either their eyes, they can use a sky quality meter, which we'll introduce you to in a second, and also they could use two new apps that we'll talk about as well. So there's four different ways. You can use one, two, three, four, or, you know, as many of them as you want to take measurements. And to do that, we go to slide number 5, There's just five very, very easy steps. And we actually tried to refer them to the website. The website is globeatnight.org, and you'll find most all of these slides on one of the web pages there on the website. But if you'd like, at the top of most of these slides, you will see the exact web page where all this information is coming from. And I'm sure that that you'll be able to download this for keeps if you want to, either as a PDF or a PowerPoint. So the five easy star hunting steps include, first of all, just finding your constellation in the night sky. And you all know the constellations better than I do, I'm sure. But the public may not. And so we have some easy ways to find the constellation on our website. And we'll mention that in just a second. And then we go to try to get them to find their latitude and longitude, which they don't really need to do. They could actually type in their address, and we'll show you that in a minute, and that would be enough. And that translates into a latitude and longitude, and we do not keep the addresses at all. And then we ask them, after they have these two pieces of information, to go outside about at least one hour after sunset so it's nice and dark. The moon cannot be up because that's a natural light bulb in the night sky, and you don't want the moon. And then you want to ask them to stay out for 10 minutes if they can to get acclimated to the night sky, get dark adapted. After they've done that, they can match, they look for Orion, say, at this point and time, and Orion is going to be very, very vivid at between 8 and 10 at night this month, and you simply match what you see towards Orion with seven different charts and pick out which one it resembles. We'll talk more about that in a second. And then report it online. You can either do it on your computer or, if you so choose, you use a little web app, we call it. It's actually a web page, but you can use it with your smartphone or smart device of any sort and take it with you as you observe. We'll talk about that more in a second. So we have these five basic steps. And if you go now to slide six, you will see that one of our web pages that actually has the five steps on it also has information on the dates of the campaigns. So there's one every month for 10 days each month. There's also the constellations that go with that particular campaign. So you can see, for instance, that for the first 3 months of the year, if you are in the Northern Hemisphere or the Southern Hemisphere, we suggest that you use Orion. I mean, that's actually by default you're using Orion. There's not much choice, I guess, in that, unless you're using your SQM, your sky quality meter. And then for the rest of the months, you can see the other constellations listed there. Leo, for instance, is in April and May for the Northern Hemisphere, while if you're in the Southern Hemisphere, it would be Crux for those months. So that's just an example of what we have there for the different months. And you could also click, if you're on that particular page, you can click on the names of the constellations and get the mythologies as well. A lot of the people love to learn about mythologies. I'm one of those people. I loved, stories about the constellations. And so, I'm sure you all use these all the time when you have your star parties and getting people to fall in love with the night sky. So on slide seven, we have also information you have on the website. Can you find Orion? Or it could be any one of the other nine constellations. And that's found on the slash finding page. You can also click on a link on that page to get the magnitude charts. But let's first of all go to slide eight and look at the chart that is for Orion. You can't do it here, but if you were on your computer, you'd be able to take your cursor and go over Orion and see the figure of Orion, the cartoon figure, basically, of Orion appear. And this is good for basically the public. If they want to figure out where Orion is in the night sky, you have this tool that they could practice on. If they, you know, after they see you, they're going to do this on their own, and this is just one good affirmation of how to find Orion in the night sky, and it's usually done for the middle of the campaign that uses Orion. So we can't do every single day for every single campaign, so we do have to pick and choose which date and time we do this for, and you can see that date and time in the lower middle of the screen, the bottom middle of the screen for each of the constellations. But on the other hand, what's really cool is that on this particular tool, you can change your latitude. So for Orion, for instance, it goes from plus 50 or 60, I believe, I think it's 60 north, down to minus 50. You can actually change all those latitudes by steps of 10 degrees, and your sky will look different for that date and time. And you could also change your constellation, too. So it's a really nice little tool that we have there. And if you go to the very next slide now, you get into basically the magnitude charts. And you can see there, this is, if you start with chart 1, for instance, which is the second one there, and you see that goes from chart 1 to chart 7, basically, magnitude 1 chart to up to magnitude 7 chart, that is precisely, it maps onto basically your limiting magnitude. So the faintest star you could possibly see is on that chart. And that's how you measure, basically, your light pollution level. So the public doesn't necessarily know about magnitudes per se, although we try to educate them on the Globe at Night website about magnitudes. But even if they don't, all they have to do is pick which chart most resembles what they see. And you try to influence them to pick one where they see the faintest star possible in the night sky and the faintest star possible on the chart and match those up. And once they do that, they have chosen their chart for the Globe at Night measurement. So as you can see, true to form for light pollution, the lower the number, the more light pollution you have in your night sky. So the magnitude 1 is like New York City. The magnitude 7 would be like in your national park, basically. And hopefully it's closer to magnitude 7 where you live. It's sort of in the middle of for Tucson. So if we go now to the chart number 10, you will see that we're starting to talk about reporting your data. And that particular report form is what we call the web app. And you can see the name of the web page is as globeatnight.org/webapp/. And that's where you would report. If you click on, if you're on the home page, though, up in the upper right-hand corner, it just says report. And you just click on that, and it'll lead you to the web app page. So, and here you can see that we can do it by smartphone, tablet, computer, whatever you'd like. And we have, for instance, now on page 11 or slide 11, we have over 20 languages. It's closer to almost 25, I think, different languages that we have translated this report page or web app into, so that people all around the world can participate. If you go to the very next slide, slide 12, you will see an example of half of that report page, and then we'll show you the other half. But you can see that, the really great feature about this report page is that if you have a smart device and you have allowed your smart device to find your location, you have to kind of enable that. It might ask you, and you say yes or okay. Then automatically your observations will go into number 1 and number 2. So number 1 is observation date and time. It'll register that automatically. You don't need to enter that. And number 2, it'll actually find you, and it'll show up with that little red balloon thing looking like feature, that dot there that you see on slide 12, directly putting your location directly in that map. And that's really a nice feature. Makes it very easy. If you do not have that working, that's just simply okay. You type in your date and time. And for number 2, you can put in your street address. But, again, we do not keep any street addresses whatsoever. We do, however, keep the latitude and longitude. And and that goes into our database along with your measurements. Once you've put in your location, you say you click Map It. It'll find it. If you like it, below the map is a little little box that says Location Correct, and you'll click on that to make it stay on that particular location and not move, and you're done for your measurements. Then you go to number 3, and that is How Dark Is Your Night Sky? And that'll show you Orion, as you see here, and you'll have 7 or 8 choices there down the bottom. Those are your thumbnail images, which you click on to change that big image. And so once you click on that one of those thumbnail images and you're satisfied that that is your particular one you want to choose that matches your night sky the best, that's it. You leave it there. You don't have to do anything else. All right? So now we're going to go to the next slide. And this is the bottom half of that report page. I couldn't fit everything on there. And basically, there's two or three things you might want to notice. You do want to put your country, and for the United States, we have that also divided into states. It should register that automatically. If it doesn't, then please feel free to correct it. And then the second thing you want to notice is the little fun pictures, of the cartoon pictures of the clouds. There's a clear option, and then it gets cloudier as you go to the right. You pick which condition is toward the constellation, basically. And then once you've done that, you'll see it highlights it. And then you can put in, you don't have to put in comments, but it's totally up to you. If you want to, that's great. If you work with a teacher and she wants to put in classroom information, it's great to be able to put it in one of those 2 comment boxes. Because she could give her kids a number, like each kid would have a different number, and she could say, you know, Miss Martin's class, maybe Lubbock, Texas, and student number 1, and then that she'd know who took what data point, for instance. Then if you have sky quality meters, which are these little card box, you know, the playing card box size device, that you just press it when you're holding it directly overhead. It'll give you a digital number that represents a brightness per unit area, or technically a magnitude per square arc second, as you would know it. And then you just put in that particular reading and the serial number for that device. Now, the reading should not be taken near a building or a light source particularly, because you're trying to get the natural night sky brightness as much as possible, as well as the, you know, the night sky that's influenced by lighting, but not a light fixture, basically. So if you can avoid that, be as far away from a light fixture or a building as it is high, is what we tell people usually. And then you're ready to send the data. So that's all there is to it. It's a very simple report form, and we hope you'll participate. Now, if you're interested in downloading or looking at any of the maps, we have a map page devoted for that. It is called maps.php, and it's on slide 14. And you can download it for each of the years. Right now, at the top, in the white area in the middle of the page, you'll see it says explore the data from 2014 as it comes in. And when you do that, if you go to slide 15, you can see that it would appear like you have in slide 15 with the different colored dots representing how much light pollution, I should say, which limiting magnitude that you are looking at for your night sky across the world. And in this particular case, you could also, it's not shown here, but you can zoom in to any location worldwide and take a look at what their city, their light pollution is like in that particular city that has the data. So and if you know anybody around the world, please advertise and get the word out there to take some measurements. That would be great. Okay, so another feature we have is a regional map generator, which is really cool because you can actually go to this page, type in an address again, Say what radius you want about that, that address or the center of town or whatever you'd like. And then it'll take only those data points and reproduce that map for you, and also a CSV file, which is like an Excel spreadsheet. And it's wonderful. Teachers love this in particular because then they can narrow down to just the area they want for their students to look at. This is also very, very similar to what you can do on the front page, the home page of the Globe at Night website, because at the bottom of the page there will be a map that is specifically for where your computer is sitting at the moment. It'll be for your, basically, your hometown. And you can, at, with that map at the lower, I think it's the lower left-hand corner, there'll be a little link for a CSV file. You can also just download your data from your area, too. So it's really kind of nice. Very user-friendly in that regard. Now, we've talked enough about the Globe at Night stuff that we usually do, but we also have on slide 17 our phone apps. And there's two new phone apps, and we're very proud to announce these this year. One was made by our colleagues that are in Germany. They actually got the money and made this app specifically for Globe at Night, which is wonderful. And then we also have a second app, which is like a meter, like a sky quality meter, but with your phone. So if we go to the next page, it explains about it a little bit more on slide 18. Okay, so the Loss of the Night app, which is the first of the two I mentioned, has you actually using your phone sort of similarly as you would with Starwalk. So you just kind of point it in the direction where it's asking you to find a star, so it actually puts a circle around a star, you try to find it. It asks you to do this 7 different times, and what it's trying to do sequentially is to narrow down the light pollution, illuminating light, the magnitude for the particular night sky that you have by asking you to look at 7 different stars. And when it does that, it actually can come up with a light pollution limit for you, which is very, very nice. And the other app is, again, like I mentioned, acts like a sky quality meter. And if you get the pro version for only $1.99, it will actually give you a reading. The two apps, the first one, Loss of the Night, works with Android phones. The Dark Sky Meter app works with iPhone 4, a little bit, but better with 4S's and 5. So I would recommend if you have a 4S, it would work much better, and any later models. Okay. Phew. Now, many people ask me, okay, so what's being done with the data? So on slide 19, you can see some examples of what we're doing with the data, which is really pretty cool. One instance we have meters that are actually stationed. We tried this this variation stationed around Tucson, for instance. We're trying to make these projects into projects that students and adults can use worldwide, but we're just in the process of figuring all this out. So we're testing different ideas out, and one is with the stations that we have for the sky quality meters around Tucson and on observatory mountaintops. We've been taking data for over a year now and trying to figure out some variations or some trends in the data with respect to time mostly and where they're located. So you have a project that you can see on the left-hand side that shows basically in-town measurements that you see on the top of the two panels. And you can see as the night progresses, it gets darker, and that 4 different colors represent 4 different seasons. The bottom one is actually on places like Kitt Peak and other mountaintops where it just is beautiful all night long compared to the city. And if you could see the measurements, you could see that it's basically like a sky of at least limiting magnitude 21 at the mountaintops and much, much worse in town. It's a lot of fun, the projects. I have students working on these kinds of things, so they're producing all this data, which is wonderful. The second project that's there is with bats. We've been trying to do this with wildlife, and you can see in the Saguaro National Park, you can see it on the right-hand side. That's where they roost. We're not allowed to show you exactly where they roost, but they come out of there at night at sunset, and they travel 25, 30 kilometers across town to an area on the upper, almost left-hand portion there. You can see the, all those are tracks of single bats that we've actually tagged and sent with little radio receivers on them. And then we've taken that data of where they've traveled and matched it with the globe at night data, as you can see there. And it's very evident they avoid towns. So the question is, do we need to protect these bats further? Do we need to protect the quarters further that they travel on? What are the influences? And there's been data reduction done. I could go into that more if you want to, but I think I should move on. But it's a very interesting research project. And we have now three other wildlife-related projects, three different groups that have approached us, and we're working with them this spring one's on insects, one's on two different types of animals, and one of these projects will actually create another app that you could take and use with Globe at Night data. So it's going to be really great. I think after this year we'll be able to introduce that next year in 2015. And I'd like to also hopefully by then introduce sort of a user-friendly graphical user interface, I guess they call it, or a GUI that people can use with the data sets and have a lot of fun doing research projects. So that's where we are with the data. We have other resources, and that's on page 20 or slide 20, various resources you might like to use, including our postcards that are shown there on slide 20. And we also have those postcards in more than 20 languages, actually. So it's been a lot of fun to translate these, let me tell you. And thank goodness for our translators worldwide. They do it pro bono. So a shout-out goes to the translators. Yay! Thank you so much. They're also mentioned on one of our resource pages as well, all the translators. So we have activity guides that you can use. If you do not have readily available a smart device or a computer on hand, you could just take out the pieces of paper that come with your activity guide and take your measurements and then go back in later on and record online your measurements. So also the things on the resource page. In fact, if you go to slide 21, you will notice we have our downloads in the various languages for the various activity guides. It's just the Northern Hemisphere, and that's not all of them. So people have been very generous with their time and their effort in translating all of these activity guides, because we have one for each constellation, for each month, et cetera, et cetera. And you can see that for slide 22, the activity guide for Orion, and that's basically what the first page looks like. It's just the first page, and that's the only page with lots of text. The rest of it is a couple pages of magnitude charts, and then the fourth page has your what you record your data on. So it's very simple. I guess this is the last page, shown on slide 23. Sorry about that. So here we go. That's your report page. And you can see, again, you put in the date, the time, the latitude, longitude, et cetera, and you choose which chart is best, best matches the night sky. Okay, so then, if that is not enough, guys, we have more. We have some education activities that you could choose to use if you'd like. If you work with a teacher or you work with the public, there's six different activities that we have made available. You can do things like on slide 24, demonstrating light pollution and shielding, which I bet you most of you do already. We have a city map that you may like to use, or the idea of using a planetarium, sort of a box, and make it into a planetarium. We have all of that there for you to download, and the way we do it is the activity sheet. And or we have things like constellation at your fingertips, which is something that you do not need to use just for Globe at Night. You could use it in your star parties, and that involves if a child held the constellation at arm's length, they would the stars would pop through the little holes in the constellation drawing, which you would actually take puffy paints that glow in the dark and trace it onto a transparency and let it dry, and you put it under UV light, and lo and behold, it glows in the dark naturally for 5 to 10 minutes, and you can use it during your star parties, as well as Globe at Night. There's various other activities here. We have an outdoor lighting audit. We have the spectrum of lights deals with efficiencies of different types of lights. The Night You Hatch deals with role-playing sea turtles. And how the light pollution affects them. There's a lot of good little things here. The one about how light pollution affects stars is on teaching the public about limiting magnitudes. So there's a lot of good things here that you may want to look at. And our kit, if you are available to take one of our workshops and you commit to the program, because these are expensive kits, on the next page, on slide 25, you can see the various things that are in our kits. But the very next slide after that, actually, it leaves out one of the most important parts, which is our light shielding demonstration, because that everything starts with that particular activity, I think. And everybody knows about that, I'm sure. So, slide 27 just shows you our program in action. We had a program last spring with all of the sixth graders in District 1 in Yuma, Arizona. And these are just some fun pictures from that particular program using that kit and training the teachers to do the project. And that was a lot of fun. And then if you go to slide 28, we had last semester, and we're still going on, actually we're still doing this project, Dark Skies Africa project. This is with the International Astronomical Union. They have an office for astronomy for development, and they gave out little tiny grants, but we were happy to have one. And we worked with 12 coordinators from 12 different African countries, most of them from sub-Saharan Africa. And we had Google Plus Hangout sessions, and we trained them on these kits, and they went and trained teachers and then worked with the students. And we had a blast. So there's a kind of six examples. I won't belabor these next six slides, but you can see the happy faces from Algeria is the first one, and that's slide 29. Slide 30 is from Zambia. Slide 31 is from Rwanda. Slide 32 is from Tanzania. And then the group from Ghana, they actually worked through a planetarium. Most of the other coordinators, were from universities, and they knew the physics behind everything very well. And here's one group from Nigeria that wanted to show off their data from the Lux meter and the SQM data that we have as part of the kit. So, but now getting back to, because I just wanted to show that there's a lot of possibilities here. You can expand in a multitude of directions. But what can you do? As amateur astronomers, I would say there's a lot you can do, but I have a couple examples here. You could, if you want and you so choose, like Norman, Oklahoma, yay. The astronomy club there did an extremely wonderful job of taking lots and lots of data one year, a few years back. I think it might have been 2009. It took a lot of Globe at Night data, both with sky quality meter data and also with the visual Globe at Night data, made maps, presented it to their city council along with some high school students, and it took 2 years, but they got their laws passed to have ordinances on reducing light pollution levels very successfully. And now there's an example, for instance, from last year. This is a man near Calgary, Roland DeChesney, and he took nearly 400 measurements in 400 kilometers, which was amazing. So you can bet your bottom dollar that he spent many nights going up and down certain roads in that area, as you can see from the map. And he uses the data also to create dark sky bylaws, basically, as well as he does a lot of things, actually. This guy's amazing. So a lot of things can be done here. And then, of course, there's a planetarium, Moorhead Planetarium, on slide 36 with Amy Sale at Moorhead, plus a lot of amateur groups across North Carolina. I think it was April 5th last year, as part of Global Astronomy Month. They elected to have a Globe at Night star party. And there were at least 40 star party sites across the state of North Carolina, which was amazing, all in that one night, all dedicated doing Globe at Night, which was wonderful. And I would say that you know, it doesn't take a whole state. It could be your city. but a star party that has people doing globe at night measurements, and then having that knowledge, being able in subsequent evenings to do globe at night measurements on their own would be just wonderful. Because you figure, you know, they go away from your star party, and they can go to their individual homes, which would be a lot of places across town, and they could very easily take more measurements, which would cover your town in that instance. So that would be absolutely wonderful, and you could be very, very influential in doing that. And then, of course, if you are really dedicated to this and you want to take the next step forward, we have a program on slide 37 that is called Adopt a Street. There's been a few cities that have done this and really enjoyed it. And what it is that we set up a web page specifically for your city. What we ask you to do is we have a paragraph or two or three that you get to edit the way you want. To set up the instructions that you, would, you know, how you'd like it said, and then we asked you to, if you can, give us 25 street names, and we set that all up for you. That looks like this particular page here that we show for Tucson, although not all the street. We have like 70 street names in Tucson, actually, a little bit more than we probably should have, but they're all there for people to choose from. And these streets in Tucson, it's like a grid. It runs north south. And so by doing that, you're covering the entire city. What we ask people to do is to adopt a street and then go for the length of the street every mile or every kilometer, whatever they want to do, and take a measurement, hopefully with SQMs and maybe a visual measurement, but at least one or the other, and then submit that data online. And if you adopt a street on this particular web page, we do not, again, we have, you know, we have to... honor the FERPA laws, so we do not take keep your address at all. All we just note is that the street has been claimed by somebody, and it's yours, your street, and no one else will take it, and you get to be responsible for that data set, just for that street. So, for example, a couple of years ago, this is what the Tucson map looked like. You could see the streets running north-south there, all the data that was taken. And that was really wonderful across Tucson. So it makes for a very good way of sampling the data from the city, all over the city, not just all in one point. I have to tell you, there is an instance in India where I really appreciate very much that they take all the data. We get no less than 2,000 data points from them for the past couple of years. But it's all from one location with 2,000 people taking measurements at the same time. So you can imagine that, you know, that's nice, but it's not, in the long run, it's not as useful as if you had those 2,000 measurements spread out across the town, even if it's at the same time, but, you know, but at least spread out at different locations. So anyway, so, and also you should feel that, you could take more than one measurement. As many as you want is just fine. And if you need to have an Excel spreadsheet and don't want to upload, you know, individual measurements, you've taken like 100 measurements or something, I have spreadsheets and I have to put them online soon. But I do have spreadsheets. You can download your data. I mean, you can type in your data on the spreadsheet, and we will upload that for you if you so desire. So... But just a few more words on various resources that you might want to use that you might be to your benefit if you're showing people certain things. For instance, on slide 39, every year this wonderful man, this wonderful amateur astronomer, does a special program just for Globe at Night, and he does this weekly, in any case, for all types of astronomy programs. It's called Eyes on the Sky. And he makes a little video, like a 5-minute or so video podcast every week on what's going to be up that particular week in the sky. And there's this YouTube address for the Globe at Night episode he just recently did for this month. And it has a very nice set of instructions. So it's like for the first 4 minutes of this 5-minute little episode, he does a very good job, if you need to use that in any sense of the word, to explain to the public how to do Globe at Night. And then if you want to have some fun, for about 9 minutes, we have an audio podcast that we recently did. Actually, I gave it to our students, our undergraduate students, to make a little skit. We have done maybe 7 skits or so of this type where you have a dark sky crusader who comes in and saves the day, and he usually addresses issues like, you know, how light pollution affects wildlife, and he tries to rescue the turtles or something. And so we had the students create this really nice sort of a skit, or a serial skit, I should say, including a new character called the Dark Knight, spelled without the K, and it's really cute. So they did a great job. If you want to ever use something like that, that's at your disposal as well, and there's the address. And then, of course, we have Facebook and we have Twitter pages, and those are the links there on slide 41. But we really have a great Facebook page, and it allows for a lot of interaction between the public and the staff, the Globe and Knight staff, which is, we're not very many people here, but anyway, so we try to post new things every couple of days on there, so it interests our members. And so feel free to look that over and contribute if you'd like. And then on slide 42, we have a worldwide contest that is being done with a collaborator of mine who helped me start our Dark Sky Rangers program that has evolved into those activities I showed you and the kit and everything. She lives in Portugal, and she and I, she is the one actually responsible for this contest. She's inviting students and teachers from around the world to come up with a brand new way of fighting light pollution and propose it as part of this contest. And the prize will be for anywhere around the world to come to Portugal, I think it's in June next year, and be part of a sort of a ceremony for the Dark Skies, I think we're designating this Dark Skies Park in Alqueva in Portugal. So it's a really, really good, nice contest to be able to do. So tell your students and your teachers of this idea and have them apply. It's going to be a lot of fun. last but not least, I wanted to mention a project that we had. I'm part of the board of directors for the International Dark Sky Association, and as part of my duties, I get to have fun with the education group at the committee, and our task, we have one big task each year that we have to do, and last year was producing a video and a planetarium show called Losing the Dark. Losing the Dark is only 6 minutes long, but it really does very well communicate all the effects, the bad effects of light pollution, and how we might be able to redress the situation. And so for your use, as either a planetarium show or a dark sky video, it's absolutely free. You could either go to the YouTube address there, or if you so desire, you can go to the darksky.org webpage. That's the International Dark Sky Association webpage. Again, darksky.org. And they have, if you search for downloads, Losing the Dark, you will come to the right webpage for this particular video to download. So it comes in various formats, so you can pick the format that best suits you, high or low resolution or whatever it may be for different kinds of computers. So everything's been so well thought out, and right now that particular video is in 12 different languages. So it's really, again, a very nice resource to have on hand. So it's been 45 minutes, and I think, oh, my God, it has been 40, I'm sorry. Oh, my goodness, it's been 45 minutes. I'm sorry. But that's it for me. I just didn't know if you all could open it up now and see if we have questions. And then the last slide is just my contact information. So, and that's it.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much, Connie. That was awesome, and we're totally stoked to help support your fine effort to educate people about light pollution and dark skies. Yeah, it looks like we still have time for a couple questions, so yeah. Let's open up the lines to our listeners. Operator, if you could let them know how to call in.
Absolutely. If you would like to ask a question, please press *1, unmute your phone, and record your name clearly. If you need to withdraw your question, press *2. Again, to ask a question, please press *1. All right. We have one question from Stuart Myers. Stuart, your line is open.
Okay. Well, thanks for the presentation.
Hi, Stuart.
Hi. I was just saying, you know, complimenting you on the presentation. And you may or may not remember that I've been trying to, since my local church is on this sort of an environmental thing, I've been working on getting them interested in light pollution. And the thing is, they're going to be doing an education thing. They're going to be setting up this sort of a environmentally oriented preschool program.
Wow.
Yeah. And I've been working a bit behind the scenes to try to get some light pollution involved in it. And okay. I was wondering which of the activities on your thing you think would be best suited to a preschool audience.
Wow. preschool is pretty young, but I think we could do something here. First, I would probably have to talk to you offline as to what language to possibly use to just show them some very simplified version of the light shielding demo, because you need a tiny bit of introduction to it that way. Mm. And then I would do the turtle, on the night you hatch, the turtle hatching role play activity. And
okay.
That would be a lot of fun for them, I think. So those two things, I think, would be the best.
All right. Okay, just making making some notes of it.
Sure.
All right.
And I'd be happy to talk with you offline, too, in more detail about that. So feel free to call my office if you want to.
All right, I can email. Would that work,
mm-hmm.
too?
Yeah, but, you know, talking is nice.
All right. Well, see, look into it. I mean, it took me quite a while just to get them interested in light pollution, actually. It took me about just 2 years just to get them interested.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah. And they got them into Globe at Night, and I don't know how many of them actually made, many of the people in the congregation made observations, and I did illustrate it. They also got to see the city dark.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
All right.
So where are you from, Stuart?
East Brunswick, New Jersey.
New Jersey, okay.
Yeah, we based in previous... The limiting magnitude around where I live is around somewhere near 4.5.
Ah, that's not too bad.
No.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, thank you, Stuart.
You're welcome. Right, bye.
Bye.
Goodbye, thank you. And actually, we're coming up near the end of our allotted hour, so we're going to have to, it'll be our last question for the teleconference. However, you can contact Connie directly at her her email, which she's kindly given out at the end of her presentation. So, thank you again. And there's one more thing before we sign off. Let's have a drawing for our prize, the signed copy of How It Began, as well as a copy... Wait, actually, just that this time. Operator, can you let us know how to do that? We'll take the lucky 7th caller.
Yes, if you want to press *1, we'll take the 7th one that presses *1.
I'm positive I can't try, right?
Oh, yeah. We can just ask Chris for it.
He's right across the street.
Mm-hmm.
All right, your 7th person was John Heasley.
John, awesome. Congratulations on your winner. You have won the free copy of the book, signed by the esteemed Chris Empe. And thanks again, and... I would like to thank Norton Books again and the ASP for donating our prize for tonight. And again, I would like to extend another thanks to Connie and the Globe at Night program for joining us for this incredibly awesome and fact-filled, information-rich presentation. I hope everyone follows up and help join the fight against light pollution in your area. And take care, everyone, and have an awesome night.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. That concludes today's conference. You may disconnect at this time.